You're listening to the Meet the Farmers podcast with me, Ben Eagle. To listen to previous episodes, visit thinkingcountry.com or find the podcast on iTunes by searching for Meet the Farmers. Hello and welcome to this episode of Meet the Farmers. My guest today is Eddie Andrew, a dairy farmer from just outside of Sheffield, whose family has diversified into ice cream making, selling direct to people in Sheffield. The farm goes by the brand name of Our Cow Molly, for reasons that will be explained during the podcast. I have to say, it was a particularly snowy visit when I called by the farm on my way up to Scotland, but that didn't stop Eddie on the day, who, as well as taking the time to speak to me, made sure that as many of his customers as possible got their milk and their ice cream, towing the delivery van behind his tractor through the snow and ice, which sort of tells you the kind of person he is and the kind of business Our Cow Molly is. Particularly impressive is his use of social media in engaging his customers and suppliers, and I had a bit of a masterclass in how to use Twitter as a diversified farm business. Here's Eddie explaining the background to how the business got to where it is today.
1947, my granddad got a loan from his dad and bought a small kind of farm. He started out with 10 cows, so he would milk the cows and then put the milk into churns and go off into Sheffield on his horse and cart, and he would decant the milk onto people's doorsteps, into teapots, whatever they had. So that's kind of how he started with those 10 cows. And then over the years, the cow numbers have grown. We're up to anything between about 85 and 90 cows at the moment. Up until the 80s, we did raw milk. So all the milk came from the cows, unpasteurised, delivered to the customers in the quite tall bottles that had the quite big green lids on. In the 80s, we then put in a small pasteuriser, and then not all long after that, an homogenizer as well. And then we offered pasteurised milk and raw milk as well. And we continue to do that in our little dairy right up until about 3 years ago. We built a newer dairy. In between that, in 2007, I wanted to come back to the farm with my wife because my mum and dad are working on the farm and my brother, but there wasn't really enough to do for me as well. So my dad had gone to a show. He'd seen that, you know, you can turn your milk into ice cream and it's worth more money. So we looked at getting an ice cream machine. So we spent a year looking into it. So, yeah, so 2007, we bought an ice cream machine, started making ice cream. 2009, we rebranded everything to be Our Cow Molly, the brand name of the ice cream.
Where did that come from?
From my dad. He had a slogan for one of the milk trucks, and it was, "Don't put it in your trolley, buy it from Our Cow Molly."
Okay.
To try and make people think that actually you don't have to wait till your milk's second hand or third hand or fourth hand. You can actually get it direct from a dairy farmer. You know, when you get a much fresher product and you know where it's come from. And people seem to really engage with that. You know, the fact that it was our cow, well, you own your own cow, so you must be a farmer. And then my brother-in-law did the branding in black, white and pink. So you immediately associate the colours of the cow. The Y on the Molly has got a cow's tail on it. And it's a really, really, I mean, that really nice kind of branding. I mean, I would have said that's been one of the big successes, is that we kind of invested the time and the money in getting a good brand, because every day we're promoting that brand. So if it's not very recognisable or it's not very good, you're putting an awful lot of effort in, and it actually makes it kind of hard work.
Yeah.
Our old milk brand was Hector Andrew & Co., named after my granddad, and it had a cow on a hillside on the glass milk bottle with a cottage behind it, exactly the same as every single other milk bottle in the whole of the country,
and
just said Hector Andrew & Co. across the front. It was like there was one design done and you just fill in your farm name. And so it was quite a radical change to this kind of round Our Cow Molly logo with a bubble letter in.
We were chatting a bit before we started recording about sort of the 7 months and having queues of people outside putting their ice creams.
Yeah, I mean it's we're 4 miles from the heart of Sheffield city centre. So literally people just jump in their cars, they drive 4 miles, and you're pretty much come there right on the outskirts of the Peak District. So you've come from the centre of a bustling town into like some beautiful picturesque countryside, and we've got a bright pink ice cream parlour in our yard, and people will queue from the front of the counter across the yard. And I mean it's great because we have a couple of full-time people that work in the shop, and then in the summer a lot of the part-time people are just sons and daughters of local people. You know, they can just walk from their house. So we employ quite a lot of the youngsters from the village, and it's the first time they learn how to mop a floor when they come and work for us and stuff like that. So it's every summer I get to teach a new batch of people how to scoop ice cream and do things like that. So it's really good though.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit about life before our cow Molly, both the farm here and a bit about yourself, if that's okay.
Yep.
After growing up here, you went away and you actually went down the agricultural engineering route. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, so when I was 16, I left the farm to go to Reseath College to study agricultural engineering. Because actually at that time, they didn't teach agriculture in Sheffield. 2 years ago, they've actually started an agricultural course now.
Oh, really?
But traditionally, everybody from Sheffield had to leave to go and study agriculture. Oh. Even me dad, you know, we're talking 50 years, they haven't taught agriculture. And now they've started doing it at Sheffield College for the first time, which is, it's only got to be a good thing, really. Yeah. So I left to be doing agricultural engineering. So it was about a 3-year course. And I worked for John Deere's in Penistone. And then I worked for Samay and Deutz. And then I kind of then specialised in repairing Grimmie potato harvesters. So, Caran potato harvesters. I'd say specialised. I think the thing was, I was the last one to say I didn't want to do it. Everybody else had said, no, I don't want that job. You get soil down your neck. I'll just do the tractors and change the oil and do the nice clean things. Mm. But it was, I always used to really like it. You get to a field, the machine would be broken. There's like a big gang of people round and they're all waiting on you fixing the machine. So there was a lot of pressure, but to be able to see that machine back up and running and lifting potatoes and everybody getting cracking again, it was a great feeling. But some odd places I've repaired potato harvesters. One next to the airport in Liverpool, right on the flight path, and you know, you felt like the planes were going to catch the top of the van as they went over, and it was just, and I'd have to get the, I had a transit van, and I had to drive the transit van as fast as I could through the gateway to get as close as I possibly could before it got stuck, and then I wouldn't have to carry my tools as far. And then the farmer would always pull me out, but it was just always getting there. You just got to try and get as close as you could.
Have you been able to, I mean, do you reckon you've taken anything from those days?
Lots of things. I mean, it's only this morning I was welding a scaffolding tube up to fasten onto the front of the van so we could pull it into the city centre through the snow. So my welding skills have been used this morning. And even the ice cream machines, you know, they've still got motors and gearboxes. You know, we'll take the side panel off and we'll try and work out why it's not working before we phone the engineer. They're quite transferable skills.
Pre-Arcan Molly, who were you selling to?
So we've got a milk round that we've always delivered to Justin Stannington. And anything that we didn't use on the milk round, it just went off in the tanker, and I think Arlo was taking it
back
at that stage.
Toilet, yeah.
There was no customers in the city centre, nothing whatsoever. That bit's sort of my fault. I suppose it's all my fault in a roundabout way. It's kind of we were all right with our little dairy doing the milk round, and we didn't have anything else. We didn't need to build a bigger dairy. And then as I dropped a bottle of milk off at a coffee shop, just because I was driving past delivering ice cream, I thought I'll drop it in, and the barista rang up and he says that milk's amazing. And he says it's kind of it foams up lovely, it's dead glossy. And I kind of said, oh, well, you know, my dad milked it from cows this morning. I says, it's probably a bit fresher, you know, then. Well, I says, where do you get it from? And he says, oh, a fruit and veg man brings it us. And he says, and I suppose he'll get it from wholesalers, and wholesalers will get it from a big processor, and big processor will get it from a farm. So I says, yeah, you're probably looking, it's about fourth hand by the time you've got it. I says, well, I brought it straight from farm. And I kind of like, and I think it was a mixture between that, you know, and the fact he was so enthusiastic about it. I mean, for coffee shops, for years, it's always been about the beans, about the £50,000 shiny machinery. But actually, the majority of what they serve the customers is milk. And it's the biggest part of the drink, but nobody ever talks about it. I mean, we were, for a bit, we were doing a hashtag saying, we don't talk about the milk. And it's kind of like just just to kind of make people think about it. I mean, it has probably one of the biggest flavour effects and texture effects on a coffee when you serve it. It's really kind of, people are starting to wake up to it now. And that's how our milk rounds developed, because people would go into that coffee shop and they'd have a coffee from there, and it's like, how are you getting your milk so kind of glossy and it's not full of big bubbles and that? And he said, oh, you know, this is the milk we use. And I think he was like the biggest champion of our milk. Mm. And he told more and more people, and people from the university went in and had a coffee, and it's like, we need to use that milk because we've got the best machines, we've got the best coffee, but we're missing that ingredient. Mm. So they said, can you supply the whole of Sheffield University? So I went, yes, and then sort of, no, because it was kind of like,
how do we supply this?
How am I going to do that? So yeah, I'm the one who comes home and go, this is the orders I've got. And Dan looks at it and goes, no. That's his first response. He did things go, no. In the old dairy, my dad was milking the cows. The milk flowed down a pipe into the pasteuriser, through the pasteuriser into a little bulk tank. And then the bulk tank at the bottom had a pipe coming off of it with a hose with a clip. And we just opened the clip, filled a 2-litre bottle, shut the clip, did it again, filled the next 2-litre, literally filling the bottles one at once. So the milk was flowing from the cow into the car non-stop, and then loaded on the van, and then the van had set off to go into Sheffield. And I put a video on Twitter about it saying, you know, is this the freshest milk in the whole country? And then I got a phone call, you know, a couple of days later from Countryfile, can Tom Heap come up and have a look at what you're doing? We don't believe anybody's getting milk within literally a few hours from a cow to a coffee shop. And I'd put like a video and say, look, this is milk of the cows, this is it in the van, this is me at the coffee shop. You know, I can show you everything over social media. And I think we've been on Twitter sort of for 10 years now. And I think that's 10 years of being able to communicate exactly what we're doing. You know, you don't need to be kind of up here. You can actually watch on Twitter, see the video, see the photographs. I mean, it's like today I've been taking photographs of me pulling the van along in the snow. People know what we're up to.
The image of the dairy sector generally and the image of milk has slightly been tarnished, let's say that, in recent years.
Yeah.
What do you think are the main reasons for that?
The Daily Mirror. No, I'm joking. It's just, it's what we get is, we get people coming up on Open Farm Sunday, and it's, is it true that you give your cows antibiotics every day? What paper did you read that in? And it's kind of like, is it true that you do this? Is it true that you do that? It's like, people don't get out onto farms to ask a farmer to find out the real answer. They'll read the headline in the paper, and then they'll talk to a friend about it, and then they talk to somebody else. And then slowly over time, that becomes a fact. The regular use of antibiotics becomes what happens on farms, because I read it in the paper, and they can't put it in the paper if it's not true. But actually, it's kind of, you know, you don't get many farmers ringing the paper up and saying, actually, that's not true, I want you to do a written apology. You know, it's just gone out as a fact. And I think that's the same with a lot of things. You'll get, you know, a lot of people talking about it, and they haven't been to a farm, they haven't seen how it is. They'll have read it in the paper, they'll have been influenced by other people, and that's what's made the decision. And they're just sharing something that actually they don't have first-hand knowledge of. We've had a lot of, you know, vegans come and visit the farm, and I've showed them the cows and how the carbs are and what we do and why we do everything, and explained it to them. And it's nothing like what they thought it was. And you know what? It's their diet is their choice. If I've helped them understand what we do so they can pass it on to other people, that actually these are the facts.
Yeah, but at least they've got an informed
exactly.
decision.
Exactly. They can still completely disagree with those facts, and that's fine. But kind of, I'd rather that they'd kind of they got an informed as possibly I can do. You know, we like to have our farm completely open. People can come, decide for themselves. If it looks like we're doing the right thing, they can talk to me dad. If the cows and the calves look healthy, they look happy. And then they can say, do you know what, I'll buy milk from them, or I'll buy ice cream, because I know where it comes from. Mm. When you're buying it from perhaps a supermarket, it's milk from a ginormous silo that's from hundreds of farms, you know, you're not quite, you don't know what's happening. Mm. You know, so, you know, we give people that option to be as informed as they possibly can be. I mean, I've had people ringing me up, can I ring you up and ask you a load of questions about your milk? And it's like, just come up,
yeah.
Come up to where I live,
sounds
you know,
right.
Come and have a look for yourself, you know, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, and people, and when you spend a bit of time explaining to people, they are then some of the biggest advocates of what you're doing, because they then tell other people, I've been up, I've seen him, you know, he spent half an hour showing me around, and yeah, and it's always worth spending your time.
Is there anyone else on perhaps the edge of a city who's doing a similar thing? As a model, could it work for someone else?
I mean, there's a few kind of like charity farms where you kind of go and pay to visit the animals, yeah. but they're a little bit like, you know, the animals are there for the paying public. It's not kind of really like commercial. Whereas our farm is, we're a working dairy farm. You know, the yard isn't pristine. Every gate's not galvanised and lovely and painted. You know, it is. Yeah. We're a working dairy farm. You come and visit us, and you kind of you find us as you see us.
Yeah. Your dad manages the cows day to day.
Yeah. My dad looks after all the cows, and then we've got Sam, who ever since she left school, she's been absolutely besotted with cows, and she kind of goes in. She'll come early before milking, and she'll go through the yard and chat to the cows and rub their ears. And she's got her favourite cows, and in fact, when she's washing out the milking parlour, when she's finished, there's one of the cows that just hangs about just to be social, and it's just the most unusual thing ever. But it's great, and you know, yeah, to have that kind of relationship and kind of see that, and for the customers to actually come and see, and they can see milking and all that, and then going to milking, and they're having their tea put out, and then they're going into the fields. And you know, if we need some people to kind of hold their arms out to direct the cows into the field, and you know, my dad's not opposed to collaring people and their children, you know, stick your arms out, you're a gate, don't let those cows pass,
yeah.
And these people are like frightened to death, and it's like, go hold your arms right out, and they're taking it dead seriously. But it's just kind of like, hey, you're being staffed for a minute now, and it's kind of like, and I think it gets people to think, actually, you know, that, you know, like with the Own Farm Sunday and stuff like that, you know, the children can actually look at it, that this is a career that they could do. They could come and work on a dairy farm, they can make ice cream, they can make butter. You know, it's a job prospect.
Sheffield is obviously a big part of what you do.
Yeah.
It's a big part of the presence here, it's a big part of, it's obviously your market. And you put Made in Sheffield on your products?
Yeah. We had to ask permission. Because Made in Sheffield is a protected trademark.
Okay.
Ever since the kind of the cutlery industry. So because obviously people were naming areas Sheffield so they could make the cutlery abroad, and kind of, I think there's like a Sheffield in America, and there's definitely a Sheffield in China. So the, I can't think what they call it. It's got a really serious name. It's like the trademark protection realm or something like that. So it was set up by the master cutler to protect the Sheffield's good name. And there's a committee of kind of key people in the city and businesses. It's nothing to do with like the Sheffield City Council or anything. It's literally kind of people that it's been really important to protect Sheffield's name. And they go and fight anywhere that's putting Made in Sheffield on that isn't actually in Sheffield. They'll go and challenge it, you know, legally, and they take it all very seriously. But you can apply for the license to put Made in Sheffield on your product. So I applied for the license, and then you're kind of hauled in front of a kind of a committee, and you have to justify why you want to put Made in Sheffield on it, and you have to prove that you're making your product in Sheffield. And I kind of said something like, I says, you guys get a lump of steel and you drill a few holes in it and polish it up a bit, and then you're allowed to say that's made in Sheffield. I said, it's not like you got that steel out of the ground.
Yeah.
And I said, we're growing the grass, we're growing the crops, we're breeding the cows, you know, we're doing the whole thing all the way up until the finished product. And I said, so I'm probably a more made in Sheffield product than anybody else's.
It's not just made in Sheffield, it is Sheffield.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you know, like it's you know, the grass, the soil, the cows. You know, the cows are born and bred here. You know, they live their whole life in Sheffield. Nothing goes out from the city, if you like. So they kind of said, right, okay then. But it was like, because nobody ever asked to put it on food before. I mean, it's now on,
okay.
There's a sausage manufacturer. Puts on their sausages, and there's a chutney manufacturer, and you know, there's quite a few food manufacturers. There's a chocolate one coming where he's making chocolate from scratch from cocoa beans, and Yeah, so it's kind of, it's
well,
not
it's
just...
Sheffield has a sort of, yeah, growing food culture.
Oh, yeah, from the food point of view, yeah. It has a three-day food festival now. But, yeah, I mean, over the years, there's more and more people started up doing food. We supply a couple of guys 2 miles away that converted their garage to be able to do patisserie in it. And it's all stainless steel and everything, but it's literally, you go up a street and there's houses and garages, and one garage, you open the door, and it's just a production room. I suppose it's no different, really, than to where we make the ice cream. You know, that was an old garage that we converted. And so we supply them with lots of butter to make croissants, and these croissants go all over Sheffield, and it's just, you know, you kind of, you can just start at home, and they're actually moving into a bigger premises near the Sheffield United ground now, so they're actually kind of growing, and it's a lot of the coffee shops we supply with milk to, they have their croissants to go with the coffees, so it's kind of like, so our butter's kind of getting back matched up with our milk again with the coffees, and yeah, I mean, it's really good to see. I mean, there's a donut place we supply that uses our butter and cream for the donuts. So, yeah, it's kind of, yeah, there's about 110 places that rely on us getting to them today in the snow.
Yeah.
Hence why we've got the tractor.
You got there, yeah.
We're still getting there. While I'm sitting here, there's two vans merrily toddling around delivering all the milk. So I haven't had a phone call yet to say any of them are stuck. But usually once they've got down off the top of the hill, down into the city centre, it's usually kind of slushy, really.
What are your plans for the future, sort of in terms of growth here?
November, we started to supply a lady in Kelham Island who's making the very first cheese in Sheffield. So we've been supplying her with quite a lot of milk. So that's quite an exciting thing that our milk's going in to make cheese, because there's literally nobody in Sheffield making cheese. And she's making these beautiful little cheeses, and she's made herself a little factory, but it's kind of, people think big massive things with towers. It's certainly not. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops, to doing the cheese, and then we've just started to do flavoured milk a little bit. You know, actually, you look at the options for flavoured milk. I mean, in Sheffield, you've got around about 500,000 people in Sheffield, and not far off, 100,000 of those are students. You've got Sheffield University and Hallam University, you know. So, and we kind of looked at the flavoured milk, and it's all UHT, long life stuff. And no matter how much flavouring you put in UHT milk, you're never going to make it taste nice. It's rotten milk to start with. So we kind of thought, well, do you know what? We do fresh milk. You know, we do it as fresh as we can, as long a life as possible. So actually, we think there's a really good market for fresh flavoured milk. We've got quite a lot of plans for Open Farm Sunday to get.
It's,
I mean, we had
up.
Well, that's it. I mean, I tried to get, because we supply milk to Morrison's and the Co-op, we tried to get Morrison's and Co-op to come to Open Farm Sunday, not last year, the year before, and just couldn't. I mean, I think they only go to 5 farms, and it's just really difficult to get them to come. So we've been supplying the Co-op perhaps for about 2 years now, and then we start supplying Morrison's from like the beginning of June. So I kind of said, you know, come up to Open Farm Sunday, the milk will be in store for Open Farm Sunday, it'll be a good lunch. So Morrison said, yeah, sure, we'll come up and we'll talk to people. And, you know, their milk buyers came up, and, you know, some quite key people. It wasn't just kind of like, you know, it was good. So a week before Open Farm Sunday, I get a call from the Co-op saying, we'd like to come up to your Open Farm Sunday. It's kind of, would you? Right, brilliant. It's kind of, but to be fair, you know, it was great, because they kind of like, we had one in the yard and one down near the dairy, and they were fine. They were kind of pleased to sort of talk about, you know, this is, you know, where we get our milk from, this is the farm. And yeah, I think, because the thing is, the reason our milk got stocked in the supermarkets was because somebody put on Twitter, can't you just supply your milk to a supermarket? I've got supermarkets near me, I haven't got any shops I can buy it from. And I says, sure, just go and ask the supermarket. I said, but make sure you ask them on social media. Don't ask in the store. Ask on Facebook or on Twitter. Let's keep like the conversation in the public. See what they say. So they said, you know, we live in Sheffield. We'd love to be able to get milk from a Sheffield dairy farm in your Sheffield store. You know, kind of makes sense. And sort of they kind of, because it's a bit disjointed, so their PR team is kind of, yeah, no problem, we can do that, we'll look into it. So because we're on Twitter, we said, brilliant. Shall I drop some off at the head office who you don't need to talk to? So we got an invitation to come up and come to speak to the milk buyer. So there's a photograph on Twitter of the van outside the Morrison's headquarters, me with some milk, just going in to see the milk buyer. And before I even got into the foyer, he'd said, I've just seen your tweet. So it was kind of like, and so they kind of like the whole thing then plays out in the public. It's what the public asks for. They see us going and seeing the milk buyer. You know, they're dead keen to support local producers, get our milk into their stores. So it's great for people to see how it works. You know, I think people think, oh, you know, you go and speak to a milk buyer of a major supermarket and it's all, you know, kind of all about price and stuff like that. You know, and actually, I don't recall the conversation being very much about price at all. It was more about logistically, how are you going to get your milk from the dairy farm to Morrison's? You know, how we work, how is it going to get to the shelves, how much we might need, you know, and all things that we were able to kind of sort out there and then. It was kind of like, I'll put the milk on the van, I'll drive it down, I'll put it on in the fridge myself. And you know, and to be fair, we go in the back through the delivery bay, we go and stock the fridge up in the milk aisle. And it's great because the customers are there going, oh, we're up at your farm at the weekend. And they're buying milk out of the crate before you've even put it on the shelf. And the staff, obviously, that work in store live in Sheffield. So they've been up to the farm. So you've got this whole kind of really good camaraderie of the customers that know about us and the staff that know about us. And actually, then Morrison's had great big things hanging from the food hall at the Great Yorkshire Show with pictures of our bottles on, demonstrating that, you know, actually, they can make a big difference to and work direct with farmers. You know, it doesn't have to go from a farm to a big processor and back to a distribution centre and then back to the branches. You know, there is an actual option for it just to go straight to the branch and kind of go the old-fashioned way where it actually just goes from a farm to the end person.
That's possible. I mean, what advice would you give to a farmer of any sector who might be considering how they could sell direct, uh-huh, but not quite sure whether to take that leap or not?
So I suppose the way to do it is you've got to look at it that you've got the unique opportunity through social media to engage with the person who buys your product. You engage with the consumer that wants to buy your product. The supermarket wants the consumer's money, so if they want to their money, they have to stock your product. So then all of a sudden, the producer has kind of not got the upper hand, but it works in the producer's favour because the producer can say to the supermarket, look, you've clearly got customers that want to spend money with you, but they're asking for our product. We're happy to supply you so we can work out a deal. If the price that they're offering isn't high enough, then you don't supply the supermarket, so the consumer will go to a shop where your product is available. And that's the gamble that the kind of the supermarkets either choose to stock it or they don't stock it. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're absolute experts in catering for the consumer. And it's so that's the way I kind of think of it. You've got to think this is 65 million people in the UK. You could talk to those 65 million people and they can drive the market for you. Get those guys to value the milk, the provenance of your milk, where your potatoes are from, the breed of your beef, and everything else will fall into place. If you kind of go to a shop and try and get them to stock it, hoping people will buy it, then the shop's then going, well, how do I know if anybody's going to buy your product? Where if it's you work the other way around, then people know it's going to sell because people are being asked about it.
What's your take on the future of the dairy industry as a whole? I mean, if you were producing milk conventionally,
uh-huh,
selling into a cooperative,
yeah,
would you be confident for the future? Would you still be in business?
Probably up until last year, then no, we would have gone without the milk round. If we were filling the bottles, if we were milking the cows and sending it all in the tanker, because we don't do any contracting or anything like that. You know, being a dairy farm is literally all our business. Yeah, years ago we'd have shut our dairy farm, even though we're so close to the city centre. You know, I mean, when I was little, everybody all around here was dairy farms. There's loads of them. My cousins, they had a bigger dairy farm up on the hill than ours, and they've got rid of all their cows, so they've slowly disappeared over the years. Like I say, not because people have stopped drinking milk, just because they've not been able to make it work. I mean, it's a bit more interesting now that you've obviously got, they're offering kind of round doors. They were offering like 32 pence guaranteed for the next year. And that kind of tells me if you can guarantee that there's not much spare about, you know, and you'd got, was it in September, one of the key guys from Arla saying, oh, you know, there's going to be no butter for Christmas. And it's because the farmers aren't producing enough milk. Now, do you know what? If you're the processor and you're paying the farmers and the farmers can't make it work and they stop producing milk, you've only got yourself to blame. And I just thought it was a bit poor, really, for a farmer-owned organisation to kind of be quoted in the BBC as saying it's because the farmers aren't producing enough milk. And it was just disappointing. It sort of feels a little bit like the PR team are a bit disjointed from the farmers. You know, for example, when we did Open Farm Sunday, I'm being asked, which cow's Bob? Which cow's Bob? We have Bob milk at home. Are they all girls and boys? Which one's girls, which one's boys? Do you know what I mean? Open Farm Sunday, I'm having to explain to people that cows, they aren't male and female that produce milk. Because some marketing companies thought Bob milk was a good idea. You know, sure, it's best of both, but you look at the car and it says B-O-B in red, and that's what the kids see. So that kind of confused matters. And then they even add, you know, the Milk for Farmers. You know, you've got the Union Jack on, Milk for Farmers, 23 pence extra, goes to the farmers. It was a great success. People wanted to support the dairy farmers. They were on board with it. You know, and from the moment I saw that, I kind of looked at it and thought, well, hang on a minute. You know, they're a multi-nation cooperative. I can't see how a cooperative can keep that money in the UK. It gets shared fairly between everybody. So, you know, so kind of like, you know, not long after, all you see is in the press. I think even if you Google it now, Milk for Farmers, the top three hits on Google are all about actually hardly any of that money spent to feed UK farmers. So it's kind of like it's stuff like that. It's really frustrating because we're trying to get the image of dairy farming and milk, and it's been damaged by people thinking the male and female cows in the dairy herd. And then actually when they go to support a dairy farmer, they find out that not all their money was staying in the UK. I think they've actually addressed it and changed it now. And they're kind of then on to now that they do, is that we 5 years ago, they set up the free range dairy. Neil Darwin, so we kind of sat from the sidelines watching, thinking, you know, we graze our cows, it's kind of, you know, it is right, you know, we do free range. And then it was kind of, you get your cows, they come, you have grazing records and all that, and you have to do it all right. And then you see on the supermarket, oh, you know, Arla is 130 days free range dairy. But actually, a lot of work had gone into working out that 180 days was achievable for an average farmer. And then not long after, that 130 days has jumped to 200 days. Because they obviously realised, hang on a minute, we've pitched below what's already there. So we're less free-range dairy than what was on the shelves. So now they've gone over 200. But actually, you know, there's farmers that supply Arla, they don't keep any grazing records. So it's kind of like, and it's there again, it's kind of like there's like a disconnect between the marketing and actually what's happening down on the ground. It just makes it easier when they come and visit our farm because they can see what goes on. You know, we do the whole job lot, and yeah, you sort of feel like maybe their marketing team need to be getting onto farms a bit more often to sort of see what's happening.
What do you do when you're not farming? In big dairy farm, you're always farming.
Yeah,
so.
we go to Cornwall in the summer.
Nice.
So that's it, and it's, we went for 2 years, we went for 2 weeks in the summer, sort of this year, and it was like saying, right, because the thing is, you organise all the guys to be in and load the vans and the milk to go out and everything to work, and by the time you've spent a week organising that, being away for a week, and then come back to try and fix it, and make sure it all went right, you know, actually, it's just as easy to be away for 2 weeks. It doesn't take any more organising, because then everybody's into it and they know what they're doing. But yeah, you've got to get far enough away from the farm that they can't go, can you just nip back?
Yeah.
So yeah, I know it's a bit extreme to go all the way down to Cornwall, but it is. It's been kind of, you know, making sure that we've got the staff that know what they're doing. So actually, I can kind of, you know, I don't need to be there just in case something might happen. It's
good.
But we're sure we're on holiday here in the countryside on holiday. It's all how you view it, isn't it?
What can you want, yeah.
And that was Eddie Andrew of Arcow Molly near Sheffield. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Meet the Farmers. Join me next time when I'll be talking to Tom Bradshaw. See you then.